sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final hour of the show. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Best product lines, best sales staff, best service department. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Zach Osterman will talk with him in a few moments about Penn State-Indiana basketball, which is tonight in the Jordan Center. It'll be at 8:30. We will join in progress here following Shikellamy-Jersey Shore with Kevin and the Chief. And then Dick and I will join you here on News Radio 1070 WKOK in a key game for both teams. We'll talk with Zach Osterman and the Indianapolis Star in just a few moments. Final half hour, we'll transition to football, talk a little bit about the Super Bowl with Neil Coulong of USA Today. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day. Last night, the Bucks were in action, taking on the Washington Wizards, and Chris Middleton of the Bucks dropped 51 last night.
Things I point out, put a championship on that, how could they not be considered one of the greatest, if not the greatest teams of all time, if all of that stays in place as Middleton.
It's shocking the lack of attention. I think the Bucks might like it. Middleton, I mean, look at the bench. This is getting out of hand when you're 14 for 21 from three.
14 for 21 from three. It's amazing, you know. He was able to do that last night. It's also amazing how, and I've taught, how many times have you heard me talk about this? Right? And this is the world of TV now. You feel like they don't do the game. I mean, I know they got a big lead and everything, but, you know, and you can see it. But guy had 51 last night. He's rolling. Right? He's taking another three-point shot. Do the game. It's all right. It's why people tuned in. Do the game. Oh, well. It's easy on the radio side to do. We have to paint pictures with words. You can't see it. So, thus, we most of the time do the game. Dick and I will veer off once in a while, but only for like 30 seconds or so. But, all right. That's another topic. Different day. The Indiana basketball has put together a really good season. They're 15 and had a really, really good week where they beat Michigan State at home. That was a great win. But then they lost to Maryland at home. It's only their second home loss of the season. They've also spent the vast majority of their time at home. That's another part. They've been home a lot. Even their tournament, the Crossroads Classic, was played in Indianapolis. It's 50 miles away. It's the equivalent of Bucknell going over to Penn State to play a game. I don't mean at Penn State. I mean playing two neutral games at Penn State. That's how close it is. So they'll go on the road tonight to face Penn State. Indiana will. At 8:30 tonight. Now on the network, it's an 8 o'clock start tonight. WKOK will join in progress, and we may be able to join in progress right at the beginning of the game because Shikellamy's at Jersey Shore tonight. Joining us now is Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star, who covers Indiana on a day-in and day-out basis. Zach, it is great to have you with us.
Hey, how we doing?
Doing really well. So yesterday is one of those shock-to-the-system games where Indiana, I felt, in the second half had control, and then suddenly, in the last minute and 10 seconds, they lost control of it. And it really wasn't a crazy ending. It just, they lost.
Yeah, they kept setting Maryland up for a knockout punch they could never really land. And you can probably go in a lot of different directions with that. You could say that maybe the hole they dug themselves to start with was just a little bit too deep and they had to exert just a little bit too much energy to get it back. And so, I mean, there were times in the second half you could see a little bit of extra fatigue in Indiana's players. There were a couple of big possessions there outside of, I think, about 2 or 3 minutes to go. A missed alley-oop, a one-pass three-pointer that wasn't even necessarily a bad shot, and certainly not a bad shot on a day when Indiana was finally getting some of those threes to go down.
Right.
But you sort of felt like, you know, if you had your time again, would you pull that out and run a set when you were getting a lot of easy stuff at the rim in the second half? But I also do think you give credit to Maryland in two ways. Number one, again, there were a number of opportunities for Maryland to just kind of collapse in that second half with the way the game had gone against them, the way they'd started, and then the way they were shooting.
Right.
And then the other thing is Jalen Smith played so well. And when you have a team that'll stick with it and stay resilient like that, and you've also got an elite player like Smith playing as well as he did, you're going to have a chance in those last moments, and Indiana just couldn't close out.
All right, Indiana has not had a lot of road experience this year. They've played mostly home games, and they had the games in at Bankers Life in the Crossroads Classic. Yet in the pure stats at home at Assembly Hall, they are averaging a blistering 1.14 points per possession. I mean, that is an awesome number. But in those limited road games, they're 0.870 points per possession. What difference do you see between them at home, where there's a huge sample size, versus the road where there's a limited sample size?
You know, it's again, I'd probably sprinkle in a few factors. I think number one, you know, up until Nebraska, which is far and away their best road performance, especially offensively, you know, the road games they've been playing in the Big Ten were your Wisconsin's, Maryland's, tough places to go for a team that, listen, I think Indiana's going to the tournament this year, but I also wouldn't overstate what Indiana had the potential to do this season either. I think it's always going to be more comfortable playing at Assembly Hall, playing in front of your fans and things like that. I also think, you know, one of the interesting dynamics of this week is Indiana had a stretch of six straight games where it didn't score more than 0.97 points per possession. That's, I think, three games at home, two on the road, and one on a neutral floor. So you get a little bit of a, you know, kind of a broad sample size there. Their last three, they've gone 1.09, 1.05, 1.29.
Right.
So maybe there is something to the idea that this team is figuring a few things out offensively that it really didn't have figured out earlier this month back in December. But I think that's something that's going to get tested this week. The underlying thing is Indiana is always going to be a little bit limited offensively. I mean, they just are. They're never going to be a volume three-point shooting team. There's not a ball-dominant scorer on this team. You know, they had to replace a lot of pure production with Juwan Morgan and Romeo Langford last season.
Yeah.
And so this team is going to go as far as its defense carries it. Now, there will be games like Maryland where some of the shots go down and they get a lot around the rim, and certainly games where they draw a lot of fouls because that's something they've been very good at this year. But, you know, it's this is never going to be a group that sets the world on fire in terms of its offensive efficiency. It's at its best when it remembers that its bread is buttered first at the other end of the floor.
What has impressed you about Jackson Davis?
I think most recently, the way that he has adjusted to the physicality of the league, he was very good early in the year, better even than I'd say I thought he would be. And, of course, you know, we got plenty of up-close looks at him. He's Mr. Basketball here in the state.
Yeah.
You know, he was an IU recruit for a long, long time. But he looks more polished, more aggressive, a little bit more dominant on the boards than I thought he would be early on. Then he kind of hit a little bit of a lull, and I'll admit I'm attempting to pull up his numbers as we speak, but he just kind of hit that freshman lull where you know, all of a sudden everybody's got a little bit of tape on you, everybody's got, you know, kind of the scouting report. You know, he only had 7 at Maryland, he only had 6 against Ohio State, he only had 4 at Rutgers. He's been in double figures in each of the last 4 games, and more broadly, he hasn't always been hyper-efficient, he hasn't scored, you know, huge numbers in any of those games, but he has looked more comfortable with the physicality and the attention, maybe, you know, these last 3 or 4 games than he did when, from maybe about the, you know, pre-Christmas time through that early part of the Big Ten schedule, teams were starting to really focus in on him more. And, of course, it helps again. It helps any big man when a few of those threes fall.
Oh, yeah.
But I think he's also just getting more comfortable at dealing with physicality and aggressiveness. And maybe, I don't know, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but maybe as a byproduct of that, understanding that 13 points and 7 rebounds is still a really good night for a team that's all about defense and rebounding and is okay being a little bit by committee in the post.
Rob Phinisee's in, I know Rob Phinisee's been hurt, so he's probably still not quite 100%. Is there still, has he steadied out, in your opinion, Zach, or does he still have those up and down moments which plagued him last year?
No, I think he's steadied out. I think that's probably a good way to put it. And certainly at least just in terms of the amount of minutes he can play.
Right.
I don't think he's ever going to be fully healthy this year. You know, they won't specify kind of what's wrong exactly, but we've heard the term abdominal injury a lot. We've seen him, you know, even in recent games, still kind of favoring his, you know, his side at times and things like that. But, you know, you look at his assist rate, you look at his rebounding numbers, and particularly his defensive rebounding percentages are very, very good for a guard.
Yes.
You know, I think, again, I think he's always probably going to be playing a little bit hurt this year, but I do think you see, I think you're seeing more, if nothing else, of a guy who, you know, I mean, he basically sort of took the loss on himself against Maryland, and he's always been a really steadying presence, even as a true freshman, even from basically the beginning of his mm-hmm. freshman season. He was a very sort of steady, you know, right down the middle, never too high, never too low, great presence for a point guard. But last season you still had Juwan Morgan, you still had Romeo Langford and all that. I think he is, as he started playing more here, you know, until Ohio State on January 11th, he hadn't played more than 26 minutes in a game.
Right.
He's played at least 26 minutes in 4 of Indiana's last 5. And him starting these last 5 games has allowed Indiana to move Devontae Green to the bench, which brings a little bit more balance to your guard rotation and gives you a scoring punch off the bench when Green's shots are going down. I think he is, you know, finally at least getting his legs underneath him as much as they're going to be from a health perspective. I don't think it's a mistake that referencing those efficient performances in the last 3 games, he's got 15 assists over those 3 games, including 7 against Maryland. I think it, you know, he's very much the straw that stirs the drink for Indiana offensively. And he's a really, really good on-ball perimeter defender, which I think has also brought some balance to Indiana's backcourt rotation after some really up and down performances when he was out, and then even when he was maybe back, but not really, you know, back to full strength or at least full capacity for whatever that's going to be this season. I don't know that you're ever going to see a fully healthy Rob Phinisee this year, but I think you're certainly getting at least as good of a version as you're going to get right now if you're Indiana, and I think that that's something that if that continues, I think you should see Indiana's kind of upward trajectory at both ends of the floor continue as well.
Zach, what is the Butler transfer Joey Brunk meant?
He's the interesting one in the sense that when he came in the offseason, there were a lot of people who sort of asked me, you know, does Indiana really need this? They have Deron Davis coming back. They have Justin Smith. They have Trace Jackson Davis. You know, Race Thompson is a developing young big. And I sort of jokingly referred to it as the Tom Izzo rule of always having one more big man than you need.
Yeah,
that it feels like whenever you
true.
See Michigan,
that's true.
Whenever you see Michigan State play,
yep.
no matter how much foul trouble their bigs get into, there's always somebody else who comes in and cleans up the boards. And it was, I don't know, this is probably a little bit of sort of confirmation bias, but to then see Indiana out Michigan State in a lot of ways in that game, you know, plus 16 in paint points, plus 2 on the boards, plus 5 on the offensive boards. Joey Brunk in that game has 14 and 6. You look at the way he played against Caleb Wesson when Indiana beat Ohio State at home a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
He's a really steady player. He brings a level of physicality that I don't think it would be fair to expect from a freshman like Trace Jackson Davis. He really allows Indiana to make these 2 big lineups work. And sometimes it feels like they're not because the mismatches create some easy driving layups. You know, you saw that like at Nebraska. Both games against Nebraska, frankly, when Nebraska went very small and Indiana went very big. But the flip side to that Nebraska game is Indiana, I think, was plus 18 on the boards and had 8 blocks. And so you take, you know, you're willing to sacrifice a couple of easy layups on possessions if it means over the course of the whole game, Nebraska is getting no second shots, you know, and the rim is shut down in the second half. He's not perfect. You know, I mean, for example, he really struggled not that anybody didn't. Jalen Smith finished with 29 points, but he really struggled to guard Jalen Smith from the off against Maryland on Sunday. But I think he brings an experience and a physicality and just kind of a, you know, a little bit of just kind of court nous, I guess, that really make these two big lineups work and give Indiana enough bodies to commit to the idea of being able to play big against just about anybody, anytime, anywhere. And for a while, it seemed like, well, Indiana maybe could do that against some teams, but not others. And I think Archie Miller's point was, no, if we're going to maximize what we've got to make other teams adjust to us, not the other way around. And I think that you're starting to see more of that in no small part because of the way Joey Brunk has really eased into his role in probably the last month or so.
Finally, what's been your impression from afar of Penn State?
I mean, first of all, obviously, the season that Penn State's having is, you know, you just, maybe it's reflective of a Big Ten that just suddenly is deeper than it's been at any point in years. But the season Penn State's having is fantastic. I think without knowing, you know, sort of every statistical reference point, it feels like Lamar Stevens is as good as he's ever been. And when that's the case, you've got one of the best players in the league to kind of start with. I think you've got, you know, it's hard to figure what's going on with three-point shooting in this league because when you look at the stats, nobody is shooting the ball well. Like, I think at one point Northwestern may have been leading the league in three-point shooting.
But, you know, it's across the country, it's 34%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Low everywhere. Yeah. And then you look around and you feel like teams on a given night, though, can just
right
find that groove and take off. And you just, I mean, like Maryland and Indiana were two of, I think, the three worst three-point shooting teams in the Big Ten in conference play before yesterday's game. And they
yes.
made like 15 combined threes in the first half. And
exactly.
We're all thinking, well, where does this come from?
Yeah.
But I think Penn State is one of those teams where maybe as a statistical profile, you're not like, oh my God, they can shoot the lights out. But on any given night, they've got guys that can get going. And especially at home, that can be really tricky because that can blow up a game plan so fast. And then I think you get some of what Pat Chambers has always had too, at least again from afar.
Right.
You know, you'd know better than me, but some of what Pat Chambers has always had, which is an adherence to that identity that, listen, we're going to be rugged, we're going to be difficult, we're going to make it hard for teams. And I don't know if maybe it's a combination of flattening the talent curve a little bit, or it's just, you know, finding the right blend of guys that finally elevated Penn State into that kind of middle of the Big Ten where you can pick up enough wins to get to the tournament comfortably and be just fine. But obviously, I think Penn State's having a fantastic season. Now, you know, if you ask me to predict this game, I don't think Indiana's going to win. I don't think that's reflective of Indiana's shortcomings. I think it's reflective of how good Penn State is this year, particularly at home. And if Indiana can land a win Wednesday in State College, I mean, it shoots to the top of their resume, frankly.
Always a pleasure, Zach. Always appreciate your work. You do great work, and we thank you for the time you gave us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always.
Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. As Indiana takes on Penn State tonight, that'll be in the Jordan Center at 8:30 this evening, and 8 o'clock will be the airtime on the network. We will join in progress here on News Radio 1070 WKOK following Jersey Shore and Shikellamy basketball. Kevin and the Chief will have that call for you this evening. I believe their tip is, 7:06 tonight? I think that sounds right this evening. All right. Neil Kulong in the final half hour. We'll talk about the Super Bowl and other NFL news and notes with Neil from USA Today. Looking forward to that conversation in just a few minutes. Let's talk about this yesterday. The 8:30 start is not an ideal start in the middle of the week for Penn State. But as I've told people, I said, I am not going to complain one iota about this. You're going to have an outlier here and there when you're trying to put together a 20-game conference schedule. And for Penn State, I've said since day one, since this schedule was announced, and I've been highly critical of the Big Ten over the years as to some of the things they've done and how Penn State at times seems like it is, oh, yeah, by the way, we got to just fill in with those guys. Okay? I'm not kidding. That's how I felt about it over the years. Not this year. As soon as I saw the schedule, if you're going to criticize, then you praise when you think that, wow, all the tumblers fell into place in terms of how it's scheduled. Penn State's schedule this year is really a really terrific schedule in the Big Ten. You know, the days of the week they play, the start times, all the way through. this is an outlier. And that happens. You're going to have that along the way when you have a 20-game conference schedule. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Neil Coulong, next half hour, coming up on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final half hour of the show. Our thanks to Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star, who joined us in the previous half hour. Penn State basketball tonight. Nittany Lions will take on Indiana in the Jordan Center at 8:30. Airtime on the network is 8 tonight, but again, we have Shikellamy Jersey Shore basketball tonight with Kevo and the Chief, and we'll start with that, and they'll lead into us. Probably the way it times out, I wouldn't doubt it times out pretty close where the end of the Shikellamy Jersey Shore game is right about the time Penn State tips off with Indiana, so it's going to be pretty close. So we'll just go from one right into the other this evening. And the Penn State-Indiana game is in the Jordan Center. And as I said in the previous half hour, you know, you're going to get an outlier here and there. But the schedule that the Big Ten gave Penn State this year was really, really good. Plenty of Saturday home games. I think you have to understand the markets. Also, the Big Ten is still doing that Friday night package. Penn State in the first year was on the Friday night package a lot. And then I remember talking with somebody in the Big Ten. I said, what's the deal with Friday night? I said, Penn State needs, Saturday games, weekend games. You go, the answer was, well, Friday, we consider to be a weekend game. I looked at him and said, what are you talking about? I said, that's a weekend game. I said, this is not Chicago, Columbus, Minneapolis, Detroit, even Madison. Madison has 200,000 people. Okay, Lincoln has 200,000 people. So Penn State doesn't have that. So in order to get a difference-making crowd, I said you have to have people, when I mean difference-making, above the norm of the number of tickets that are sold in the building, to get it into five digits, to get a five-digit crowd at Penn State. I said, you need to have Saturday games. So that's just the way it works. Sunday is a little dicey for people. Friday night, they got to work and then travel. I said, Well, last year, Penn State had one Saturday game. One. That was the Rutgers game last year. It was the only Saturday home game Penn State had last year out of 10 Big Ten home games. This year, they've got Saturday games all over the lot. Now, this weekend, they're at Nebraska, but next weekend, they're back home on a Saturday with Minnesota. So again, the schedule this year for Penn State, the Ohio State game, a Saturday. Obviously, the Iowa game, even though it was at the Palestra, was a Saturday. That's where the difference-making crowds at Penn State, and that's a good understanding of the market. Turns out that tonight's the 8:30 game. Somebody said, don't complain. I said, this schedule's really, really good. It's really good. If I thought it was lousy, I would say it's lousy. Well, when it's really, and you could only complain that it's lousy. In my opinion, you could only complain that something is lousy from a point of view of logic if you also have the ability to praise it when you think it's right.
Can't always be the person that just complain. Yeah. You have to have also be the person that says, okay, you know what? Now that's good. That's right. That way you're giving a balanced perspective. So tonight's the outlier. It's fine. The students will probably be out there tonight, to be honest with you. As Seth Greenberg said, how many students you got on that campus? 45,000, Steve? I said, yeah. He says, get them out there. Seth. Not my job to get them out there. I think they'll be out there a pretty good force tonight. The students will. All right. Let's talk now about, and Matt Cotrillo's been aching for this. He's been aching for this, for anybody on the planet to talk about the Pro Bowl. He's just begging anybody to talk about the Pro Bowl. Now, we'll get to the Super Bowl in a moment, but there's only one person I feel like I can talk to competently about the Pro Bowl, and that is the incomparable Neil Coulon. How'd you like that word, Neil? Incomparable.
Tuesday is my favorite day of the week. I get words like incomparable, and I get to talk to you fine gentlemen. So thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. The Pro Bowl, T.J. Watt had a big play. Fitzpatrick had a big play. And it was fun to watch flag football at a grand scale.
Yeah, you know, if honestly, I don't think people would be too upset if they just played flag, you know, simply because you can't play football in a recreational way. You know, it doesn't work.
No, actually, I agree with you. You can't.
You've got half-court basketball, and even the All-Star game, it's not like they're playing defense. They're just going to dunk and score and everything. You don't play football that way. You know, it's not ever going to mesh. So if you take the idea of tackling out of it and you just make it a spectacle for what it is, you get to see fun things like T.J. Watt scoring a touchdown and, you know, all the end zone celebrations and the mic'd up stuff on the sideline. And people won't freak out with the idea that they're not trying as hard as they would like them to. That's really what it comes down to. It's supposed to be for fun, but I don't think the game itself can be played for fun. I enjoy it just in the sense that it's fun to see the players out having a good time, showing some personality.
Yeah.
I like that part of it. I don't take it that seriously. And that's an aspect of football that makes it as popular as it is. So it's really hard to remove that from it. But if you just, you know, kind of admitted this is what it is, we're just going to play flag or touch or something, I think fans would follow that a little bit more. I get why they wouldn't want to do that. I haven't seen the ratings of it yet, but if they actually are down to a point where the league would, you know, legitimately worry about this, which I can't imagine that they are, it might be an option that they would want to look into, and maybe that would get more players to want to play. I mean, you know, when you see Ryan Tannehill out there, it kind of, you're aware of who isn't there. That becomes kind of an issue as well.
Right.
I don't know how you fix that outside of, you know, maybe giving them more money, but the quarterbacks in particular, they're huge factors of their team. Many of them now are making $25+ million a year. $70,000 isn't, you know, doing a whole lot to them. You know, in the grand scheme of things, it's not going to really inspire them.
Yeah. I want to get to the Super Bowl. No, actually, before I get to the Super Bowl, I actually want to bring up one more point about the Pro Bowl. There was actually one interesting point in the Pro Bowl where the NFC was behind, scored, and then for the first time they tried the 4th and 15 play from the, 25-yard line instead of an onside kick. What do you think of that as a possibility down the road?
You know, it's... I go a couple different directions with this, and I'll start off by saying I don't like the introduction of things that get away from what the founders of the game sort of envisioned, at least not in like a let's jump 10 steps ahead kind of way. The two-point conversion, the extra point, that's a pretty big step. You know, they make that step, that there's reason to do it, but that's inherently kind of part of the game. Marking a down start the possession as 4th and 15 is not a natural progression to the game at all. An onside kick is at least within the rules. I can understand they want to have some type of replacement for the onside kick. The percentage of that, I mean, I may as well play the lottery. You know, you don't recover onside kicks. You just don't. There's a variety of different things that always go wrong with it, never benefiting the kicking team. To set that up throughout the course of the game, it seems to create something much more artificial than what it's really meant to be, if that makes sense. It's like an untimed down randomly placed in the middle of the game somewhere. I don't like what it feels like. I see what they're trying to do, and I applaud them for. And the NFL does do this. I think they don't get credit for trying to be imaginative with their product and come up with things. But in this particular case, I just think it's too far, removed from the natural course of the game as we know it. And there will be teams that try it. I think that the impact of not getting it is worse than not getting an onside kick. And I don't know if the percentages are that much better. And it's only going to create another opportunity for officials to throw flags that nobody wants to see. So I don't know if it's going to create the excitement that they think that it will. In the end, it's going to be, all right, well, you just gave the team the opportunity to kneel the ball out anyway. You may as well have just kicked it. Or if you got it, well, it's because the ref threw a flag, had to have this. And it just seems like a lot of stuff is going to go into it that it only creates a negative talking point after the game. You're down that point for a reason. You shouldn't have to be rewarded and have a situation be made easier for you to continue the game in a way that it never was designed to be continued in.
I do like the fact that they tried it in the Pro Bowl. It's the equivalent of what the NCAA does with the NIT. They'll throw a few experimental rules in to see how it looks and to see if maybe it has the potential to be adopted. And I think the Pro Bowl was pretty much their... It's an experimental area, and I think it's different, which means you gauge how the fans react to it. So I think that part to me is fine. Now we'll see what they actually want to do with it. The Super Bowl, I believe they're playing that this week. What's your initial read, Kansas City, San Francisco? Because San Francisco kind of plays an old style of football in some ways, lots of motions, use a fullback. Kansas City uses the entire width of the field.
This is really kind of the football dork Super Bowl, because there are so many things that both of these teams are doing that are very modern versions of very basic concepts.
Right.
What I love about watching San Francisco's offense, they do so many different things before the snap. They set up so many different things to run very basic plays. We were watching... Back before they had film, if you were around then, you saw Bronco Nagurski running a lot of the plays in San Francisco does. They're not overly advanced.
They lead. San Francisco leads the world in window dressing. And you know what? I think there are times they only run like a dozen plays.
If you broke down exactly what they're doing, I think they have 9 trillion plays. If you look at two or three of the key pieces of a play, they're running maybe a dozen. And that, to me, is really what football is. Pre-snap football is about setting stuff up and looking to see what the defense is doing to respond to it. That's the modern element of it. That's
brilliant.
Where we see the evolution of the intelligence of a quarterback, reading a defense, all these things that are much more prevalent in today's game than they were even 30 years ago. The West Coast offense sort of brought about these things, using the width of the field, going horizontal. And what Kyle Shanahan is doing is taking elements of a spread concept, spacing, and putting old school, power blocking in many cases along with it. And it's fun to watch because it's not just your typical, have guys run 15-yard digs and run combo routes off of that and break stuff open in the short passing game with legal picks and things like that. I hate that kind of offense. San Francisco does stuff in a much more old-school approach. They want to outflank, they want to outmaneuver, and they're using all 5 skill positions in similar ways. You love watching football like that. And on the flip side of it, you've got Kansas City. You've got Andy Reid, an offensive genius, one of the best the game's ever seen, with Patrick Mahomes, who is, in my grossly overstated opinion, probably the best pure passer we've seen in the NFL since Dan Marino. And you watch guys like that meld together with modern concepts, but just pure athleticism, pure dominance down the field. I mean, you ever watch Tyreek Hill run routes? He runs like 65-yard patterns. You don't see guys doing that.
Right.
He's exploding on the inside down the wide side of the field. Mahomes is able to move around a little bit by himself, like 6 seconds in the pocket, and he throws 50 yards on a line down the field to Hill, who's athletic and acrobatic enough to go up and make plays. I mean, it's fun to watch. It's entertaining. And Mahomes is simply brilliant. And his the way that he approaches looking down the field, the way that he sees defenses evolve after the snap, he's a brilliant player. He has a great eye. He has a great arm. And he's athletic enough to be able to find himself time with his feet and to stand and deliver a strike way down the field. I mean, he's basically unstoppable. You're not going to be able to hold him under 27 points very often. I mean, it's going to take a lot to do that. So on top of that, you've got San Francisco's defense, which is otherworldly in their front seven. They're a dominant unit. Preparing for the chess game that this is going to turn into, it's a lot of fun to imagine what they're going to do against each other throughout it. But in the end, for me, I think Mahomes is just too much, and I don't think Garoppolo is enough. I think Kansas City, they're going to go for the dagger early. If they get up 14 points, I think it's over. And please record that and yell at me next week when that doesn't happen.
Yeah, this is it's interesting, as I think Kansas City has the best and the worst in this game. They have the best unit on the field, their offense. They have the worst unit on the field, their defense. And San Francisco has the second and third.
Yeah, I think that's fair to look at.
I mean, the question is whether that best unit is enough to overcome the fact that the other two units that are placing second and third in this competition.
And that's the part I think that's really ironic about this game, is you've got everything about Kyle Shanahan, as modern as he is. He's going to get beat simply by the fact that he doesn't have a quarterback as good as Mahomes. Plain and simple, he just doesn't. And when the rubber meets the road, they're out there.
And that was his problem in his last Super Bowl.
Really,
you can talk about the 28-3 lead. Oh, it still haunts him. Hey, how about some execution here?
Yeah.
Okay,
The Patriots won 11 key plays when there were 11 key plays left in the game.
Right.
And the Falcons won the 11 key plays that came before that. I mean, it really, if you look at it, it's not a surprise it went into overtime. I mean, it's a coin toss, and then, as luck would have it, the exhausted units got to get back out there for one more drive, and they couldn't stop it. And much of that is, I don't want to say it's coaching. Yes, you could say you want to run the ball here, you want to run the ball there. They had a holding penalty. They had fumbles. They had bad protection. The Patriots made one more play than the Falcons did in that game. And I think with this, Shanahan has probably that in his mind, but he's on the other side of this now. He's got to know they've got to hold on to the ball. Garoppolo cannot turn it over. And they had the benefit of being able to play an NFC Championship game without putting any film down passing the ball. They didn't need to. I mean, they're cracking off 9 yards a pop if that's what you do. Don't bother throwing.
Right. I can see the meeting right now. Let's look at their pass plays. Right. The meeting 3 minutes later breaks up.
That's it. All right. Well, five screens, a couple incompletions.
Okay.
But you watch him against the Vikings. He didn't look good. And the Vikings are probably a little bit better of a defensive unit, I think, than Kansas City is. But they're not too dissimilar from each other.
They have Xavier Rhodes. They have Xavier Rhodes.
Yeah, our buddy Xavier.
Pro Bowler.
You see him in the Pro Bowl? he was a Pro Bowler. We got him to show upside. I'm not sure if he got, half the – I don't even know who won the Pro Bowl. I'm not going to lie. I was buried with the Kobe stuff. But Xavier Rhodes doesn't belong in a Pro Bowl.
No.
Let's get into that again. I have too much fun going over that.
Yes.
Fortunately for both teams, Xavier Rhodes is not on the field in the Super Bowl, because that would definitely give San Francisco an advantage, and Mahomes would – absolutely destroy that guy if he has a bad day.
I know.
We've seen it before this season.
Neil, always a pleasure. You make Tuesdays better.
Tuesdays are my days. I like that. I like owning that, and it's great to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. And we'll get Neil back on next week as well. Probably when I'm at Michigan State next week, we'll have him on next Tuesday, as a matter of fact. All right, so here we go. Big night coming up again. Look, they're all going to be like this. And that's what makes this fun. You know, people gravitate. I mean, why is the Super Bowl so big? Because people have the opportunity to see a game with stakes. And that's what people gravitate toward. You know, you're always going to have the base fan that they love their team, they love their sport, they love their city, their town, whatever it may be, and they follow those teams. I mean, no matter what, thick or thin. You may complain about your team because they aren't playing well, but that's because you love them, right? You may love them when they're playing great because you love them, right? But what the difference is that gets the masses involved in a sport, and I've said this many, many times, are the games with when teams start playing games with stakes. And that's what really becomes fun, where more people get involved because the games have stakes. And that's what, you know, that's what Penn State football, every game, you feel like every game is a game with stakes. It's huge. It's big. Right? Right along the line. Right? Bucknell, when they're playing in the Patriot League, trying to get to the top seed, then you get to the postseason play. Games with stakes. Well, that's what Penn State basketball is involved in this year. Games with stakes. That's why a win over Ohio State, big. Win over Michigan, big. Well, you got another one tonight. Indiana, Jordan Center, 8:30 on an 8. Big. We'll be following Shikellamy Jersey Shore basketball here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.